This podcast was recorded on Thursday, March 22nd at 11 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like Mike DeWine might have invited Mary Taylor over for dinner.
Or something else. Okay, let's talk politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU's weekly look at Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up, we'll talk to an expert who says Central Ohio's two Republican congressional districts are a little more competitive than they were a few months ago. But first, the weekly roundup.
Let's turn first to the Republican race for governor. It's taken a really nasty turn. Mary Taylor has been going after Mike DeWine hard, really since the beginning. But she may have gone a little too far when an online ad linked DeWine to disco.
In 1976, the Big Red Machine won its second consecutive World Series. Disco was sweeping the nation, and the Carter malaise was beginning. 1976 was also the year that Mike DeWine won his first election. From prosecutor to state senator to congressman, lieutenant governor to U.S. senator to attorney general, Mike DeWine has been on a government payroll for the better part of 42 years. During these 5 decades.
Okay, so there's that. And Taylor's PAC also released an ad accusing DeWine of voting with Hillary Clinton and against Donald Trump.
If you like President Trump, then you won't like Mike DeWine. In the Senate, DeWine voted with Hillary Clinton to let illegal immigrants receive Social Security. And in Ohio, DeWine allowed illegal immigrants to receive driver's licenses. There's more. DeWine backs...
So after those two ads, Mike DeWine fired back. His campaign set up a website. You ready for this, Mike? MaryTaylorDoesNotWork.com. And they started running this ad.
Is Mary Taylor ready to be governor? Taylor can't keep her staff, raising questions about her leadership and oversight. She was busted using the state airplane for personal use. And Taylor is dogged by rumors that she skips out on work. A slacker whose work schedule is almost untraceable. Mary Taylor, unfit and unqualified. Mike DeWine is a proven...
Wow.
So there we go, Mike. DeWine has been ignoring Taylor until now. Why suddenly turn his attention to her?
Well, it is interesting because, you know, there hasn't been public polling in this race that we've seen in a while. My guess is that Mary Taylor is getting to him, and her pro-Trump stance and her constant attacks of Mike DeWine are moving numbers in their internal polling. And Mike DeWine is seeing one of two things, either that Mary Taylor is gaining strength or that his favorability number is going down for his run in November. So he has decided to fight back, and I'm surprised. Mike DeWine, it's his campaign, the DeWine Houston campaign that has set up this MaryDoesNotWork.com. That's aggressive.
And there's another Twitter account linked to DeWine's campaign that tweeted out that Mary Taylor using a state plane in 2011 for personal reasons was, quote, criminal, and it included the infamous hashtag lock her up.
Yeah. I mean, the Republicans were proud that they did not think they were going to have a nasty primary.
Not anymore.
And they can Mike DeWine, who's the establishment candidate, who was the favorite in this race, was going to be able to save all of his money, not get blooded up in the primary, prepare to take on the Democrat in November. In 1 week, that has been turned on its head. So it's really interesting on what's going on here.
I guess the Democrats, in a way, are benefiting from having such a crowded primary that there's not this level of animosity between any two candidates. I mean, we've seen some chirping back and forth between Rich Cordray and Bill O'Neill, but not on this level, not nearly on this level.
This is personal. I mean, this lock her up. I mean, that's personal.
Is there any personal history between these two before this campaign?
I really don't think so. I think they've sort of run parallel.
I don't remember anything in particular.
You know, Mary Taylor was state auditor before she was lieutenant governor. I mean, Mary Taylor really has done pretty close to 180 on her establishment role. She was John Kasich. She is John Kasich's lieutenant governor, has been in statewide office now for 12 years, and she's running as the anti-establishment candidate.
The anti-Kasich candidate in
yes.
A lot of ways.
She's always been very conservative, but she's always been a part of the Republican team, and this is really going against the team, and then DeWine's fighting back. So it will be interesting to see if there's any blowback on Mike DeWine. He's seen as a nice guy, a real policy wonk, a champion, a family man. When you start using terms like lock her up, I wonder what kind of impact that will have on moderate, independent voters, particularly women, who will see this ad.
It is a really interesting about face for Mary Taylor, and this whole campaign, it's bound to get even more interesting. We still have just about 2 months left. Turning now from the State House to Columbus City Hall, Mayor Andrew Ginther, council leaders, and the city attorney are working around state limits on local gun policies.
They're pushing a package of ordinances that would ban bump stocks, you know, those devices that turn semi-automatic rifles into automatic weapons. They would impose minimum sentences for people who have a gun while violating restraining orders. And this was interesting. And ban commercial gun sales in residential areas.
Yeah, we can talk specifically about the Buckeye Firearms Association response to that last one you mentioned. City Council President Shannon Harden said that they would try to do more, but they're restrained by state law that limits local gun laws.
The majority at the State House has tried to handcuff local officials. State or federal action is needed to implement universal background checks or ban assault weapons. The State House has stripped cities of the ability to enact most gun safety laws.
And City Attorney Zach Klein admits that this package of ordinances looks to exploit a loophole in state law.
The all-encompassing Ohio code that prohibits municipalities from acting in this space explicitly says, with the exception of state and federal law, and we're operating exactly in that exception.
Mike Thompson, these laws will almost certainly pass the democratically controlled council. Mayor Andrew Ginther likely signing them into law. But how much do they really do?
Well, they're largely symbolic. You've seen other cities do this as well. I think Akron passed a resolution asking the state legislature to ban assault weapons because the state legislature has been very clear in that cities can't pass their own weapons bans. And that Columbus was the sort of example of why this law is in place. Because you look at the map of the city of Columbus, you would pass from the city of Columbus through Clinton Township, back into the city of Columbus, then into the city of Hilliard, then the city of Dublin, back to Clinton Township. I mean, how can you have a ban in the city of Columbus, but not all of those townships or all of those cities? So what the legislature wanted to do is have one ban for the whole state. So if you had one of these guns, you wouldn't have to like give it up when you cross the street. So that's the reason why they don't want cities to do this from a logical standpoint. And, of course, the legislature has been very pro-gun rights for quite a while anyway.
Getting to one of these specific ordinances, the city wants to ban commercial gun sales in residential areas. As I mentioned, the Buckeye Firearms Association called that a, quote, laughable attempt to fight local crime. I was surprised by the lack of response from pro-gun groups on this. I had to search really hard for a response from one group, from the Buckeye Firearms Association.
I think they see a slight change in public opinion and even in the political winds on this. I think that more so than in past mass shootings, that, you know, there's some strength to gun control. There's some strength behind that movement.
There's more political will than there used to be.
I mean, Florida passed some gun control restrictions, and
they're an equally conservative legislature, at least ours.
Yeah, and there was, you know, if you had said that 6 months ago, I would have said no way. John Kasich has proposed gun control measures at the Ohio State House. They haven't gone anywhere yet. One of the strategies for gun rights groups, the NRA and others, is to let it play out. They think that the arguments for gun control will eventually fade as memories of a shooting fades. We'll see if that happens again.
And finally, some State House Republicans this week unveiled a bill to ban abortions in Ohio, not after a fetal heartbeat or after a diagnosis of Down syndrome, just to ban all abortions by defining a, quote, unborn human as a person under Ohio's criminal code when it comes to homicide.
You know, we hesitate to even talk about this because the state's largest anti-abortion group, Ohio Right to Life, has not really said anything about this. It has not endorsed this proposal. Neither has Governor Kasich, and it would almost certainly be ruled unconstitutional by a court.
Is this just pandering by far-right conservatives in the State House?
Well, I think there are some far-right conservatives who truly believe that abortion should be illegal. I would say Ohio Right to Life believes that abortion should be illegal across the board. They want to do it incrementally. They think they can do it incrementally, get a case before the Supreme Court. But if you go for it all at once, you risk, if you're an opponent of abortion, you risk losing it all by going too far too soon.
And one of the sponsors of this bill, Ron Hood, a very conservative Republican, did say basically that this is an attempt to get the issue back before the U.S. Supreme Court. But again, that would require it to pass the State House first so someone could be aggrieved by this law.
Yeah, and this is very similar to the heartbeat bill, as you mentioned. That didn't go anywhere in the State House. There was a lot of pressure, I think. It just never became law because they saw it as an overreach. This law is even more of an overreach. It'll get some attention. The far, far right anti-abortion folks will praise these folks for this, but I don't see it going anywhere.
Time now for our weekly segment, John Kasich GPS.
Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Rockville, isn't this close to Bethesda?
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
Ground control to Major Tom, help me.
This week, Kasich went to California to meet with the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome my very dear friend and great governor of Ohio, John Kasich.
Yes, it was a day-long conference, basically espousing moderate Republican views, saying that Republicans have to turn away from the far right. So it really was a right up John Kasich's alley. It was preaching his message. He was the star, other than Arnold, of course. He was the star attraction and got a very warm reception. You know, he basically gave the same speech as he gave at the State of the State, sort of taking care of your fellow man and woman.
Did he quote Plato or Socrates?
No philosophers, but it was the same theme. One part, he's talking about how he's willing to compromise on various things. You know, he talked about Medicaid expansion and education and police community relations. And he also brought up guns.
And now, Arnold, we are talking to the legislature about guns. And we got the people in favor of the no change in the Second Amendment with those who want to change. And we reached a consensus.
They reached a consensus in that small committee.
I was going to say, that's news to me if they reached a consensus.
He has not yet got a consensus in the legislature, and he left that out, which is, you know, it got a warm
smart
reception.
It's good PR.
Yeah. I mean, he's trying. I must say it's not over yet, but the chances of reaching that same consensus in the state legislature right now, I think, is
pretty,
a long shot.
Pretty low. Last week's shocking victory by a Pennsylvania Democrat is having ripple effects across the political world, including right here in Central Ohio. Connor Lamb's upset win in a district easily won by President Trump in 2016 has pushed some pollsters to change how they handicap other congressional races. On the line now is Kyle Condick from the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. Thanks for your time, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Connor Lamb's win pushed you to change your rating for two Central Ohio districts. What were those?
So we made two Republican held districts in Central Ohio more competitive in our ratings. The first one, and probably the more important change we made, was that there's a special election coming up in Ohio 12, which is Delaware County, kind of northern Columbus suburbs. We moved that from likely Republican to leans Republican, meaning we still see the Republicans as favorites to hold that seat when the special election happens in August. But we also think that it's gotten more competitive, and there's every reason to think that it should be pretty competitive, even though it's a seat that Republicans really should be able to hold, given that it's a district that Trump won by 11 points, and it's also a district that contains some of the most historically bedrock Republican turf in the whole state.
It's the seat that was held for years by Pat Tiberi, and before that, our current governor, John Kasich.
That's right, yeah.
You also changed your ranking for the seat currently held by Steve Stivers of Upper Arlington, although that district is not deemed to be quite as competitive as the 12th district. Still, what seems to be going on here? Is it just that the suburban, more moderate Republicans seem to have quote-unquote Trump fatigue and they don't want to follow the party that far to the right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that Central Ohio is filled with a lot of traditionally Republican voters who just aren't necessarily fans of Donald Trump the way they might have been of, say, George W. Bush or even more recently Mitt Romney. And we saw that in the election returns. I mean, obviously, Trump did a lot better in Ohio than Mitt Romney did. Romney lost the state by 3 points. Trump won it by 8. But within that, changing Republican performance, there are also some places where Hillary Clinton performed substantially better than Barack Obama did, and some of those are places in Ohio 12, again, sort of northern Franklin County suburbs. And, of course, Clinton ran ahead of Obama in Franklin County itself and also in Delaware County, even though Trump comfortably carried Delaware County. Clinton did better than Obama did there. So if the Democrat can sort of activate those voters make sure they're more motivated to show up in the August special election, that could provide the basis for an upset. But again, I think it would be an upset given, the Republican leaning and lineage of Ohio 12.
You also write that there are some key differences between the Pennsylvania district that make Pat Tiberi's old seat, the 12th here in Ohio, easier for Republicans to hold on to. Is that just the bedrock Republican base there, or is there something else at play here?
I think that's a big part of it, in that Pennsylvania 18 actually had a Democratic registration advantage, even though a lot of those so-called Democrats are reliable Republican voters these days. But I guess not totally reliable, because some of them voted for Connor Lamb for Congress. But, I think there's a pretty decent chance that once the candidates decided in the May primary that you're going to see, millions of dollars come in, particularly from outside Republican groups who are going to try to avoid, another loss that would be, something of an embarrassment, just mm-hmm. like what happened in Pennsylvania 18.
Would you expect the DNC to pour money into the race?
We'll see about that. They did spend some money in Pennsylvania 18. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the campaign arm of House Democrats, they did not run as much advertising. Part of it was because their candidate there, Connor Lamb, was such a really good fundraiser on his own. So, again, a lot of this depends on who the candidates are and what kind of fundraisers they are.
Kyle Kondik is with the University of Virginia's Center for Politics, which changed its rating for two Central Ohio congressional districts following last week's surprise win by a Pennsylvania Democrat. Kyle Kondik, thanks again.
Hey, thank you.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Snollygoster. If you enjoyed this show, please leave a positive review for us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. If you didn't enjoy the show, I don't know why you're still listening. So if you give a positive review, more people will find out about Snollygoster.
That's a good thing. And you can always listen to 89.7 NPR News Live using the WOSU Public Media mobile app. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play WOSU. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson.